Okay, so this sutta that I've just been reading out, then this is like the background sutta. This is like the overview sutta of, about the things I want to talk about mostly on this retreat. And so please keep this in mind as kind of a background to all the other explanation that's coming later on. And the most important point here, like I've just been pointing out, is this juncture where virtue kind of moves on to meditation, right? This important, very important relationship between virtue or morality or goodness, if you like, the relationship between that and the process of meditation. This is that relationship, I think, is entirely crucial for understanding the Buddhist path, how it works, how it actually works. So this is what I want to talk about for the rest of this retreat, talk about that relationship, how to purify your virtue even further, how even to use meditation practice to purify your virtue. But first of all, what I want to talk about today is a little bit more detail about that precise relationship, the relationship of how virtue moves into samadhi, how it moves into the process of meditation, how that relationship actually functions. And this is what the next sutta is about. I'm not going to read out the rest of this sutta because you can read it for yourself if you like. And if you have any questions, please ask. But it's those are the very deep stages of meditation. And I don't want to focus on that at this particular time. So the next sutta here is called Fools and Wise Men from the Majjhima Nikaya. And this is a little bit about how virtue leads on to this happiness that is required in meditation practice. Okay, so this is how it goes. Bhikkhus, there are these three characteristics of a wise man, signs of a wise man, attributes of a wise man or woman. I think the man is like the default gender, so that's just what is used in the Pali language. It basically means everybody. What three? Here a wise man is one who thinks good thoughts, speaks good words, and does good deeds. If a wise man were not so, how would the wise know him thus? This person is a wise person, a true man. But because a wise man is one who does these things, speaks, thinks good thoughts, speaks good words, and does good deeds, the wise know him thus. This person is a wise man, a true man. So this is interesting here that the wisdom in the suttas is equated with being good, right? A good person is by definition considered wise, right? Not only wise, he says here, is a true man. The idea, the word behind this is sapurisa, often translated also as superior person. So either true person or superior person. So why is it that someone who is good is considered wise? What is the reason for that? The reason for that, it seems, is because if you are good, goodness is what gives rise to happiness in the world, right? Happiness is what everybody wants. Nobody wants more depression. Nobody wants more sadness, more sorrow. Everybody, if possible, wants to be more happy, more at peace, more at ease, more relaxed. All these good qualities, that's what we all basically want. That's what craving is all about. That's why we have craving in the first place, because we want those things. If we didn't want that, we wouldn't have any craving. So the very fact that we have craving means that we want those things. So the good person is the one who understands the causes for his own happiness or her own happiness, and also understands the causes for the happiness of other people, right? So because that person understands the causality, understands what we all actually want, and is not only understands that, but also provides that to other people, that is why they are a wise person. They're giving us and giving themselves the things that we really want in life. So the idea of wisdom is a very pragmatic understanding of wisdom, right? It's basically because they have the ability to give others or help others and themselves to acquire what deepest down we all actually want in life. So this is the meaning of wisdom, really, in the Buddhist teachings, as I understand it. And of course, this is still a fairly shallow form of wisdom. A much deeper wisdom would be the wisdom which comes with meditation and deep insight, when you really have the ability to provide other people, and yourself as well, of course. First of all yourself, then others, with what they really want in life. Okay, so you are wise when you are good. That's always nice to know. And then this sutta continues. A wise man feels pleasure and joy here and now in three ways, right? So a wise man, in other words, a good person, right? What we're talking about here. If a wise man is seated in an assembly or along a street or in a square, and people there are discussing certain pertinent and relevant matters, then if the wise man is one who abstains from killing living beings, from taking what is not given, from misconduct in sensual pleasures, from false speech, from wine, liquor and intoxicants, which are the basis of negligence or heedlessness, he thinks, these people are discussing certain pertinent and relevant matters. Those things are not found in me. I am not seen engaging in them. This is the first kind of pleasure and joy that the wise man feels here and now, right? So, when wise people, people who understand how the world functions, understand how the mind functions, when they talk about others, when they talk about such issues, they will basically be saying exactly the things that you already know to be true. And they will be saying things that the right way of living is exactly the way that you are living here. And this is one of the beautiful things about being virtuous, that other people who are you consider wise, they will tend to praise you, right? That will be the consequence of being a virtuous person. Other people who we might look up to as wise, as intelligent in the spiritual sense, as understanding the world as it actually is, they will tend to praise us. They will tend to look at the world in the same way. It doesn't really matter so much if the kind of a scallywag, you know, thinks that we are no good because we are too kind or whatever. It doesn't really matter. It is what the wise people, at least for me, what the wise people in the world say that matters. If they praise me, then there is a kind of a sense of contentment there. Okay, I'm doing the right thing here. And they feel that it feels good. But if somebody else does it, it doesn't matter so much. So this is one of the happiness, that you know that you are praised by wise people in the world, and they look at things in the same way as you do. Not that we should be too attached to praise, of course. That's also a problem. But just that sense of feeling good about what you're doing here. Then comes the second one. When a robber culprit is caught, a wise man sees kings having many kinds of torture, if you like punishment perhaps, inflicted upon him. And then there is a long list of punishments, and this is quite an entertaining list. This is the kind of punishments they did in India 2,500 years ago, and they were pretty gruesome, some of those punishments they did in those days. There's a long list of different kind of tortures, right? I don't think there's much point in going through that list, but just for your, you know, for entertainment sometimes, these things can be a bit of fun. But then the wise man thinks thus, because of such evil actions as those, when a robber culprit is caught, kings have many kinds of punishment inflicted upon him. Those things are not found in me. I am not seen engaging in those things. This is the second kind of pleasure and joy that arises in the wise man feels here and now. In other words, you know that you're not going to be punished for anything you do, right? You're doing what is right. You don't have anything to fear. A person who does bad things is always on the lookout, right? You always have a sense inside, a sense of fear that maybe I will get caught. Maybe someone will catch me out. And then you might be shipped off to Carnet prison farm up the road. That's very useful to have the prison farm just up the road. It reminds you of the dangers of being bad, right? And there's always that danger there that you will be caught. You always feel, you're always kind of looking over your shoulder. Is somebody kind of, you know, seeing me? Or has somebody... And this is, I know that for myself, when I was a child, you know, you do bad things, you take some sweets from your, you know, your mother's kind of larder or whatever, and you always kind of, you know, you feel a bit bad about it afterwards. And this is life. You can never avoid that feeling if you do bad things. And it's that freedom of those things, from those things, that kind of gives a sense of gladness inside of you. Okay, then comes the last one. It's this last one that I really enjoy, and that's why I'm reading this sutta, because this is the one that to me is the most powerful of these things. And this is why I always like this one, and I always find it inspiring. So I always like to read this one out. And it goes as follows. So this is the third reason why the wise person, the virtuous person, feels happy here and now. When a wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal and mental conduct, they cover him, overspread him and envelop him, just as the shadow of a great mountain peak in the evening covers, overspreads and envelops the earth. So too, when a wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal and mental conduct, they cover him, overspread him and envelop him. Then the wise man thinks, I have not done what is evil. I have not done what is cruel. I have not done what is wicked. I have done what is good. I have done what is wholesome. I have made myself a shelter from anguish. When I pass away, I shall go to the destination of those who have not done what is evil, who have made themselves a shelter from anguish. He does not sorrow, grieve and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast and become distraught. This is the third kind of pleasure and joy that the wise man feels here and now. So, it is like these good actions that we do, the whole idea of morality or kindness, it's like it permeates your body, permeates your mind. You become full of these things, right? It's like you can't escape from all your good actions. And whenever you sit down, whenever you rest, as it says here, you come, for example, after a long day's work, you come back home and you sit down and you close your eyes or whatever, and all of the goodness comes back to you, and you feel that goodness inside of you. So isn't that beautiful? There's nothing particular that you have to do. You don't have to recollect these things, because they are so much part of your personality, because they're so much part of the character of who you are. It's almost as if you can't escape all the good actions. They are part of you. They are intrinsic to who you are. They completely immersed in the goodness of your own actions. When you sit down, you close your eyes, you just feel glad and you feel happy as a consequence. It's such a beautiful thing. And sometimes one of the reasons why I like to mention this is because sometimes you have this idea in Buddhism, we have this thing called the Sila Nusati, and Sila Nusati translated, one translation which is, I think, reasonable enough, is the recollection of your own morality, a recollection of your own virtue, right? So the idea of recollecting your own virtue is precisely this, that you feel gladness. But you can see here that if you do it correctly, you don't have to really recollect, do very much for that recollection. It's almost, even the recollection itself is like a natural thing that just happens. You just sit back, and it all comes back to you. Sometimes you can use a little bit of kind of helping, use a little bit of a helping hand to remember these things. But the ideal way is just to allow these things to arise on their own accord, and you just feel glad because it is all there. There's nothing more you have to do. So that is the this is how then you can see here how the virtue translates into gladness in the right way. This too is a natural process. It's so much part of your personality. You can't escape that goodness anymore, right? Sounds good. At least to me, it sounds really, really inspiring. This is the sort of thing that kind of pushes you in the right direction. Sometimes you need just to remember a few kind of key pointers in the Dhamma. That is enough to keep you practicing, keep your nose kind of guided in the right direction, right? Not veering too much to the left or to the right, but roughly going down the straight path in the right direction. Okay. So, and then he also, what does it say here? So part of this as well here, you can see that he also feels that he, because of that happiness, he thinks anyway, I shall go to the destination of those who have not done what is evil, but of those who have done what is good. And it is strange, I don't know what many of you here feel about the idea of rebirth. Some of you may think there's no such thing as rebirth. Some of you may accept it. It doesn't really matter. But one of the it matters perhaps a little bit. But my main point now is that when you feel gladness inside of yourself, if you think there is a rebirth, you don't really have any fear about the afterlife. If there is an afterlife, you feel pretty safe about it, right? You don't really have any worries about that. That goodness inside of you gives you a sense of freedom from worry also about the future. It's like there's an intuition there that if there is an afterlife, say that you are agnostic about it, you don't know one way or the other, well, if there is an afterlife, then still you feel safe about that. You feel quite good about it. You have nothing, no fear from that kind of thing. That is also one of the good results from this. However, if you are a person who has done many bad things in your life, and if somebody tells you that there is an afterlife, you want to kind of blot out the idea, but the feeling is actually bad. You are afraid of dying, especially if there is an afterlife, because you feel that if you're going to die, you feel there's an intuition that you're not going to go necessarily to a good place afterwards. So again, it's just a natural psychological thing here. Whether you believe in it or not, it is this natural psychological thing happening there. So, that is the third kind of pleasure and joy that the wise man feels here and now. And because of that, because you see that and reflect on that, this is one of the things, right? One of the reasons why this sutta is so powerful. When you reflect on this, and if you understand it, and if it makes sense to you, then you start to put these things into action even more, and they become even more powerful, and they bring you in the right direction, and they empower your meditation as a result. So, then it says, the very last thing here, is that then, on the dissolution of the body after death, he does reappear in a happy destination in the heavenly world. So that is one of the consequences of good conduct. Okay. So that is the second sutta. It's a bit shorter than the previous one. But let's take another break and then we'll move on to the third sutta afterwards. Okay, so let us continue. Okay, so the next sutta here is called Mahanama. Mahanama was a cousin, apparently, of the Buddha's, he's quite a well-known layperson. So this sutta is actually specifically giving to a layman at that time. And again, this idea here behind this sutta is to continue this, to understand the conjunction, the connection between virtue on the one hand and meditation on the other hand. This is very specific about that, how the connection works between virtue and meditation practice. So I'll read this out and then explain in a second what's going on. Again, Mahanama, a noble disciple, recollects his own virtuous behavior as unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration, leading to unification of mind. When a noble disciple recollects his virtuous behavior, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed with lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight, based on virtuous behavior. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes unified. This is called a noble disciple, who dwells in balance amidst an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amidst an afflicted population. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of virtuous behavior. So I'm sure you can see straight away there that the same sequence is mentioned here as we just saw before, in the the sutta before that. Exactly the same sequence, right? From virtue, you move here through all this, exactly the same stages of happiness until you reach samadhi. This is what I meant, that this sort of sequence, you see it again and again in the suttas. It is a very important part of how the Buddha explains the path of meditation. Right? So again, we are here back to the same basic idea. So, how does this work? So you can see here, the way it works is the virtuous behavior that you have, it is here qualified by all these words. It's unbroken, right? Now that's, unbroken means, basically what it means, that you keep your virtue over long periods of time without breaking it. That's what it means. Once you break it, once you have a break in that one, if it's only a small break, it may not matter so much. But if it is a big break, and that break maybe happens several times, then it will have a detrimental effect on this particular way of practicing. So the idea is here that you have a continuous virtue which goes over long periods of time, and that's when it becomes very powerful. So that, in that sense, it's unbroken. It's flawless, right? You are, as Buddha says elsewhere, you are afraid even of the slightest flaws. That we chant after doing the Patimokkha recitation at the monastery, it says you have anumatesu vajesu bayadasavi. It means that you see fear or you see danger even in tiny flaws. You don't think, yeah, whatever is only a small thing. You think, wait a minute, if I do this, I'm actually destroying to some extent my own ability to experience happiness, right? Do I really want to do that? I'm pulling down my meditation practice to a lower level if I do this. Do I really want this? So you see the danger even in doing small things that are wrong. So you avoid that. So you are flawless in the sense that you see the danger in these things. This is an important part of this. Once you, and this is one of the things you will see, and come also to see more in your meditation practice. You see how your conduct affects your meditation. And by doing that, you see the danger inherent in bad conduct, even small little things. Even thinking the wrong thing, right? Wait a minute, should I really be thinking this? Even that is a good way of kind of coming around and starting to think in a different way. Flawless, unblemished, unblotched. I think these are just synonyms, essentially. Freeing, right? This is one of the things. If you are virtuous, you feel a sense of freedom. You know, most people in the world, they think, oh, you know, I've got to be restrained by all these kind of rules and all these kind of things. I've got to be kind. I don't want to be kind, or, you know, or whatever it is. You feel a sense of, you are imprisoned by virtue. You have to be good, right? If you feel you have to be good, you're imprisoned by all these rules and all these ways of doing things. But from a mental point of view, if you look at your mind, how you feel after you are practiced in a good way, you actually feel more free. You feel like you're liberated from a burden. And this is one of the